You are Locked On AFL, your daily AFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On AFL. I'm your host, Kane Pittman.
Particularly with a pathetic effort from Pitt. I mean, it was the most disgraceful display I've ever seen from a big fella. That's pretty hard on an individual, but he's going to have to live with that.
And alongside me, as always, is Josh Lloyd.
Lloyd is Lloyd. Lloyd to Lloyd. 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 Lloyd.
Kane, I'm not going to say that you are what Mark Robinson called Leon Cameron on AFL 360 last night, but I'm also not going to not say it, if that makes any sense. But good to have you back, and we have got a ton of footy coming up.
Yeah, no, I'm not out here to label anyone a Josh Hunt on this podcast, but we do have a lot of footy. This is honestly a rare day where there's no games on, because it's going to get pretty serious in about a week's time here when everything kicks off. We know we've got the last real standard round of footy, if you want to call it that, Thursday to Monday this week. But the fixture drop for me has become, I don't know whether I want to roll with it in future years. I think it's probably best just to drop it at the start of the season in a normal situation for the world. But, geez, it's kind of fun getting this fixture drop and running through it and seeing the games you're going to get to watch, and Wednesday afternoon games and doubleheaders on Monday. It's ridiculous.
I wonder how teams feel about it. Like, obviously, it's a necessary thing at the moment, but players and teams, how they feel about not having any understanding of where they'll be, who they'll be playing. I know the old cliche is 1 week at a time, but there's no way that teams actually look at things 1 week at a time. That's actually impossible. That someone, no one in the club goes, oh, I don't even know who we're playing in 2 weeks' time. There's no way that's possible. So I'd love to know how they feel about this, not knowing where they'll be or who they're playing or when they're playing and what the rest protocols is going to be, because we can talk about, oh, well, it's fine, you just go there. But if it's a 6 day break, a 7 day break, a 4 day break, then that sort of needs to be planned in.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Victorian teams, it probably matters less now that they already were well aware that they weren't going home. Because yeah. I think if there was that lingering hope that they were going to get back to Victoria, things were going to be okay down here, then maybe it would be more of an issue for them. But I think, you know, regardless of the breaks, regardless of the travel that they're going to have to do within states, I think it kind of doesn't really matter at this point, considering they know they're not going to be home. But no doubt, we know this. I mean, we looked at this. Some teams have a really difficult fixture over the next 4 weeks here. It's always interesting to me, because you listen to the coaches, whether it's on radio, TV, whatever. There was a couple of coaches on 360 last night, and the only answer they can give is, well, everyone's doing it. We don't have much to complain about. But there's no doubt there would be some teams that would be probably pretty frustrated with the draw they've got over the next month. But everyone's been put out. We've known that since the start of the season. And I've been big from the start in saying that, don't complain about it, because everyone's in an awkward situation and doing things they don't really want to do in regards to rest, in regards to travel, hubs, all the rest. So it's, for me, I'm just, as a fan, excited to watch all this footy.
It's going to be weird to have these afternoon games as well. Like, we've got a Wednesday night game, but then we've got two on a Thursday. You're starting at, I think, about 6:40 Melbourne time, 3:40 in Perth. Then you've got Saturday afternoon games and Saturday late night games, like a 9:10 start on one of them. You've got these Wednesday doubleheaders with Geelong, North Melbourne in round 10 starting at 5:40. That's a very, very weird time. But yeah, two games on a Wednesday, two games on a Thursday. It's going to take some adjusting just to say, okay, well, you know, we're used to one Friday night game and now a Thursday night game, but like, he's going to have two Wednesday night games, and just trying to change that around. It's going to be interesting fighting for the TV remote in some households.
Yeah, I mean, if I completely separate my concerns over wins and losses and health of players, this week as a Cats fan, going from Thursday night footy to Monday night footy and having that 11-day break, it's like, geez, feels like a long time since you get to watch your team play. So from that perspective, yeah, 4-day breaks are pretty cool, but it's going to be a challenge. So I've got some of the teams here that I think stand out to me. The ones that everyone's talking about, the Cats, obviously, the four games in 14 days. The Pies have four games in 13 days. It's going to be tough for them, and we'll get to resting strategies in a little bit. Another team I'm looking at, though, is Gold Coast, because they don't have to leave Queensland. And we've spoken about them, and I've been pretty high all season long saying that I think eventually they're going to slip out of the eight. Picked up a really important win over Sydney on the weekend. But this four-week slate, so after they get over this week, then they've got the Giants, St Kilda, Essendon, and then Richmond. So The plus side for them is that they don't have to leave Queensland, but that's four pretty difficult games. Essendon is the only really team there that's been a little bit shaky, although at times they've looked fantastic. So four tough games for the Suns. This is going to be really make or break for them as they try and establish themselves and maintain touch with the eight heading towards the finals.
Yeah, they need to win two of these next four or five games. Yeah, probably three, to be honest, to keep themselves in that contention. And there are some really tough matchups for them. But again, being in Queensland, being at home, is going to help them across this stretch of time. We'll get a decent indication of them tomorrow night when they take on the Bulldogs on Thursday night, which again is their first primetime game, which then is not being shown on free-to-air TV, which is an absolutely terrible decision. Because I talked about this before, that we talk about, you don't want to put these low-drawing teams on free-to-air, on primetime games because they don't have the fans. But how do they get the fans if they're not giving an opportunity? Now they're given an opportunity and they don't get exposure to the fans to see them and see how well they play, which I think is pretty rough for Gold Coast. And it's something the league shouldn't be happy with, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, I don't know what the broadcast deals are, so I can't really say that they should have this game on over other games. But we know with this fixturing coming up that there's going to be some strange games and strange times, and I assume that Channel 7's picking up some games in situations or time slots that they normally wouldn't. So I had to guess then when I responded to that tweet you had, and I figured that that's the case. It's unfortunate for the Gold Coast. I think most footy fans at this point are not relying on Channel 7. Let's just say that, because at times, yeah, I mean, they've dropped games. I mean, looking on a Saturday afternoon, there's no footy anymore. I mean, growing up, Saturday afternoon, there was always footy games on TV. It's strange for sure, and it does suck for the Gold Coast. You would think that getting them national coverage would be a priority in what is actually going to be a really good game. Let's be honest, Gold Coast and the Bulldogs, I'm certainly looking forward to that one.
Yeah, two teams that have been playing with some pretty high-level games. Even in the games that they lose, they tend to be high-quality games or entertaining games. We've seen that from basically all of the season. So it is one that is really interesting to watch. The other thing I think we do need to touch on quickly here in terms of news is just the passing of Shane Tuck. So obviously, thoughts with his family and his immediate family, his father, everyone who has known and dealt with Shane Tuck. That's terrible news.
No doubt about that. I always enjoyed watching him play footy. He was pretty rough around the edges, but he was tough, and always seemed to be that guy that was on the verge of being dropped from the Tigers. And as someone who wasn't a Richmond fan, it never really made sense. I mean, the teams weren't that great, and he always seemed to be their consistent ball winner and hard at the footy. So no doubt about that. It's 38. It's too young.
It absolutely is. Last bit of news I want to talk about here. It's been bandied about quite a bit here about North Melbourne and Ben Brown, and he's available for trade. And I think people run with that too much. But the question we have here, I guess, is how do teams, like we talked about North Melbourne already, that they seem to misevaluate how they were building their squad, and went probably the wrong route in terms of getting experienced players in. So do you think they have the stomach for it? Do they have the ability to just go, well, we're going to move into that Adelaide type mode now and just try and accumulate picks? And what would you be doing with Brown? And on the other side, how do you value Brown as another team?
I don't know how you value him as another team. That's the difficult thing. They might have, not that there was any chance that they could have traded him at the end of last season, but certainly the value is down on where it was 6 months ago. Now, is that fair? Probably not. When you look at the way the footy's being played, the shorter quarters, the congestion, it's tough for a key forward. So I think that if you're North Melbourne, you have to look at this, though. And we've got a question, and we may as well roll to this. We've got a question from Dean Vasic, who asked a hypothetical scenario to us. He says, North Melbourne seem to be going nowhere.
Yep.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Three of their best five players are in their 30s. Should they go to Geelong and trade Goldstein, Higgins and Tarrant for first rounders? Now, Geelong's obviously only example he's throwing up there. I think they've missed the boat, to be perfectly honest. I mean, if you want to use Geelong as the example, they wanted Goldstein pretty bad last year, a couple of years ago, and Goldstein stayed. He's already 32. He's going to be turning 33 next season. So I think, if you're a team, are you throwing a first rounder at North Melbourne for a 33-year-old Goldstein or Higgins, who has been healthy since coming to North Melbourne, but certainly early days had histories of injuries? I don't think so. I mean, I truly think that for getting really good value and good draft capital for those guys, I think they've missed the boat. And that's why if Ben Brown, if someone comes to you and says, we're going to give you a first rounder and maybe, I don't know, something else involved in the trade, then I think you at least have to consider it. I think we're at the point now where we understand with those guys that Dean mentions, North Melbourne aren't in a position where you think that those guys are going to be leading a premiership team.
Yeah, Dean's a North Melbourne supporter as well, so he's coming at it from a frustrated point of view, I'm guessing. Yeah. But yeah, look, Goldstein, even Robert Tarrant's 31 years of age. Like, yeah. These are guys that you're probably getting that elite return in a deal. You're probably out of it in terms of that, because I know I wouldn't be like, can I bring in Todd Goldstein at age 32 to give me one good year? Maybe 2 good years, and then set development back of someone else. Like, what team is out there going, we really need this a past elite ruckman who's still been pretty good, but where does it go? It doesn't go up from here. I think we know that with these guys, and that is it's a tough call, because it's all well and good to say North Melbourne should do this, but you need the other team to bite on it, and I don't think I would if I was one of those other teams.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, they're in a really difficult situation. And I agree. What you mentioned, Adelaide as a team, they're kind of in a similar boat, because when you look at the Crouch brothers and potentially one of those fellas is going to go to the Gold Coast. There was certainly one or two last year. I think that you have to do it if you're Adelaide. There's been a lot of talk about the compensation they may get. Now, we've spoke about this. Listen, the compensation is just garbage. It's garbage. If you're telling me that one of the Crouch brothers can leave Adelaide and you're going to give them the number 2 pick in the draft, it is a joke. That is ridiculous. There's a reason why those guys are the ones that get slammed every single week from Adelaide fans. So how would that be related to the number 2 pick, or equate to the number 2 pick in the draft? I don't think so. I mean, the compensation system is just completely out of whack. But Adelaide are in the same boat. A lot of veterans that have played in that grand final team back in 2017, and like North Melbourne, on paper, you look at it and you say, oh, it's a halfway decent team. But if they're not getting the results now, you have to pull the trigger at some point before it's too late. And I do think North Melbourne might have got it a little bit wrong.
The term free agency is a little bit of a misnomer in the AFL, because it's obviously not free, because if you're signing a player, then you're then getting, you're making the team that they're coming from getting some sort of draft pick compensation. So teams that do look to sign Crouch or trade for him would then sign him, because he's a free agent. Then they go, well, do I actually want to give Adelaide the top 2 picks in the draft? Because then, hey, let's, we don't want to pay this amount to Crouch, because that's going to trigger that pick. That's not free agency. Free agency is the players go where they want. Like, that's it. There's no, it's free. There is no conditions around it. There's no, well, you get this. It's absolutely ludicrous. The players go, they go. That's it. Restricted free agency, a little bit different. You got the match rights, but they go, they go. And the compensation pick is something that is not ideal. But let us move on to something else today, because it is mailbag day. Kane, we had a question come in from Draftman, who big on the mailbag, Draftman. He says, do you think there'll be an AFL team in Tasmania by 2025? So 5 years away. If so, do you think the AFL will then want a 20th team to avoid a bye? And who would that team be if they needed another one? 2 Tassie teams, or what would you two like to see happen in this regard?
Well, I think Tasmania is really interesting. I think they're going to get a team eventually. I think the big question right now would be, with everything financial happening with the league and the disruptions they've had this season, how long does it take the league to recover and the clubs to recover? Because that's going to be vital here. Because when you listen to teams and the amount of money they're expecting to lose this year, this isn't an international sporting powerhouse that we're talking about when we're talking about AFL clubs. They don't have that much money, and they've had to cut their staff majorly in half at times when you think right across the board for the club. So I think financially the league is going to go through a couple of lean years here, and they're going to need to recoup those funds. Do I think that the league would be looking to expand while that's happening? I don't. If you look at the NBL, they're going and pushing ahead with a team in Tasmania. So I think they'll be able to look at that and look at the growth of that team. I think Tasmania in general would support an AFL team. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they always got pretty decent crowds down there, whether it was Hawthorn, whether it was North Melbourne. If you gave them the opportunity, whether it was a team split between Hobart and Launceston or in one of those towns, I think they would get right behind that. As far as the bye goes, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, would you remove a team? I'm against that. I think ultimately the talent around Australia and the talent that you're seeing come up from the state leagues literally every single season tells you that there is enough room and enough talent out there that you could add another 2 teams and the league would be totally fine. It would put you in a position where you can have a 19-round season every year. Everyone plays each other once. I think 20 teams is good for the balance of the league.
Yeah, look, in terms of Tassie getting one by 2025, I'd say no. I'd say give it 10 years because I could see 2025 if we didn't have this whole coronavirus nonsense going on at the moment. Then, yeah, 2025, and it should have already happened, let's be honest. We are all well aware of that, that Tasmania should have had an AFL team. But I think 10 years' time they will. Would they get two teams? What, a Hobart and Launceston team? I doubt that. Maybe you want to throw Port Melbourne in there, get one of the old VFA teams in, but that wouldn't be what they do. I think they'd look more to be a third team in Adelaide or in Perth would be most likely, I would guess. Would they put a Canberra team? I don't think they'd get the level of... it's just not big enough, I don't think. Where would you think the 20th team would come from? Because I agree the league can deal with a 20th team in terms of having enough players there. Or do they go regional Victoria, like a Ballarat, Bendigo, Goulburn? Like, how do they look at that? Because that's the tough thing to me.
Yeah, I think definitely not Victoria. I don't think there's been a lot of talk around, and you hear a lot of people say there's too many teams in Victoria. I don't agree with that, but I think that because I think you look at the teams and the success they've had, the crowds they get, I think that they're fine at the moment with that amount of numbers. I don't think you need to remove a team from Victoria, but you certainly don't need to add one. That's for sure. So I don't know. I mean, can we get funny and get one in Alice Springs, Darwin? Yeah. I don't know. Let's get crazy. If we're going to have one in Tasmania, who, as you said, certainly deserves a team, I'm just not sure which state wants a third team. I don't think it's Queensland or New South Wales.
Put one in North Queensland. Put one up in Cairns or Townsville. Maybe there, because there's some pretty decent grounds up there. In Adelaide, would you put three right in Adelaide? Is there a regional area of South Australia that could support a team? I don't think so.
I don't know. I know we've got some listeners in WA and SA, so let us know. Is there room for a third team? I don't live there, so it's hard for me to say. I will say the two traditional footy states and always get big crowds, even when their teams aren't playing well. So maybe one of those states is the answer. Put a third team there. I don't know, but let us know at LockedOnAFL or, of course, LockedOnAFL@gmail.com.
Draftman's other question is, what's your commentary dream team and who's a commentator that you can't stand to listen to?
Oh, I don't know if I don't get too fired up about commentators I can't stand listening to. I don't know. Maybe I'm too easy on these people and I don't want to slander anyone. But I will say the commentators, I love Hutto. I love Hutto.
So, Hutto, yep.
The other day there was a group. It was Anthony Hudson, John O'Brien and Nick Riewoldt. It was a fantastic group. Unfortunately, Eddie McGuire was with them. But I just said I don't slander people, but I just tuned him out whenever he was talking. He can't even remember or figure out which player is which. But Anthony Hudson is a favorite of mine. As far as the special comments go, I do have to give a shout out to Jordan Lewis. And I say this as a Geelong supporter that hated Jordan Lewis as a really Hawk good. And all the Hawks, but he's fantastic. He's thoughtful. He's just out of the game. It's never about him. And I think that's the guys that I like that are analyzing the game. They don't compare it to their era. They don't compare it to what they did as a career. They talk about the players and they analyze the game and give you an inside look. Jordan Lewis is fantastic.
I think Lewis and Riewoldt are the two of the best pass players at the moment with their... Del Santo is pretty good, but I like those other two guys better. Lewis has been fantastic this year, and I agree with you with Anthony Hudson as the best commentator. Yeah, some of the stuff that's... Yeah, I think Bruce McAvaney is getting a little bit tough to listen to. We all know he's a legend. Brian Taylor, there's issues there. Dwayne Russell's not someone that I particularly care for as a commentator, but there are good ones out there. It's not that all of them are terrible, but I've been saying this for about 10 years or so. I want to get commentary announced teams where, okay, you know, Eddie is commentating Collingwood games, he's biased. Get one person from each team and let's see. So they actually have some more in-depth knowledge about those teams and they can throw that stuff in there rather than sometimes, because as a fan of a team, you'll be watching your team play and you go, that's not right. That's not happened. They've been playing that role for 3 years, but the commentators don't know that. I'd rather have someone there, one from each team, then a neutral Anthony Hudson, although, you know, when he's calling Geelong games, maybe he's not as neutral, but having that sort of person there with some special comments that can come from a team-specific scenario, I think that would be something at least worth trying.
I'm out on that one, Josh. I got to tell you, I'm out on that one because I know they do it in the States, and if you listen to home broadcast, it's fantastic. I think the trouble is that it's national, it kind of bothers me when, the other night when I was watching the Adelaide St Kilda game and Mark Rusciuto was doing some interviews, and it's like, fine, if that's...
Yeah, but you don't have the balance there. You need the other guy on the other side, though, because if you just have one person there, that's a problem.
Yeah, but then I don't think Australia, to be honest, on a national broadcast with people listening that literally don't really want that biased commentary, I don't think it would work. And for some reason in Australia, they had this problem with, on that night, Eddie asked Rusciuto and he threw to him and he said, what do you guys need to do? And it's halfway through the third quarter. And it's like, well, no, that's not what I'm listening to. I don't want to hear someone that's an employee of the club telling me what he wants his team to do. That's not what I'm watching for. I'm just watching for people that understand the game to tell me what's happening. So I have to admit, I'm out on that one.
Okay. I want to know what other people think about that idea, because I think if you have one side with Rusciuto there, and he's not necessarily the best example because he's not great on the mic, but having someone that at least can balance it out and not necessarily just calling the whole game, but you can go both sides and they can provide a little bit of that extra insight on that team. They're watching them every game versus someone who, like, I think Bruce said something the other night, like, I haven't really seen many of his games because they haven't been on Friday night. Like, that's a problem to me. When the commentators go, I don't really, haven't seen this guy. Is this what he does? Is this how he does things? Like that can be a bit of a problem to me.
I will say one last thing. Shout out to the commentators, though, because I know they get a lot of flack. And this season in particular, I will say that, and I mentioned the fact that, you know, Eddie got a couple of players wrong the other night and had to keep getting reminded of who actually had the ball. But they're not at the grounds. And
yeah, that is harder.
And we look at the TV and we look at the camera angles and we say, oh, geez, the camera angles aren't great. And then at the same time, we hold the commentators to the same standard. And I think it's pretty hard because they're commentating the game off a TV screen. And they can only see what we're seeing on the TV as well. So I think for the most part, they've done a pretty good job. And also, sometimes they're not even in the same state when you talk about, you know, Bruce and BT with Channel 7. I think Bruce is still in South Australia. So shout out to those guys. It's obviously a tough job this year.
It is hard to do, because if anyone's ever tried to do it, it's really, really hard to do it. I think I have an issue sometimes with commentary as well, is that if I'm a lot of them commentate like it's on radio and we can't see what's happening on the screen. Mm. And that's a hard habit to break out of, versus, like, you know, handballs to thing, kicks it here, kicks it forward, takes a mark, goes back, kicks a goal. Like, I can see that happening, whereas it's just like announcing names, whereas I'm not sure that is not the ideal way to do that, I think, for television. But yeah, that's sort of what's ingrained, and it is very much like a radio broadcast put across onto a TV screen. But more questions coming in for the mailbag. Darren Matheson says, which list would you rather have, Geelong's or Brisbane? Regardless of ladder position at the moment, which is closer to a flag?
Lead us off. I'll let you go first with this one.
Okay. Ladder position, they're pretty close. It's really hard to split that. Of course, yeah, Brisbane's one game ahead, so that's not a massive difference. They played each other. Geelong got the win. I think that I'd probably take Brisbane in this case, because if closer to a flag, look, you'd have to say they're about 50-50 this year. But moving forward, when Ablett, Selwood, Dangerfield, Hawkins, like these guys who are still the prime movers, move on, Brisbane still has Andrews. They've got McCluggage, Rayner, Neil. These guys are all still young and pre-prime or in their prime. And I think that if we're looking at where the arrows point, Geelong's might be, you know, just on a marginal down tilt, while Brisbane's is going the other direction.
Yeah, I think this is pretty easy. I mean, this year, as you sort of pointed to, it's, you know, you could have one or the other. I mean, Brisbane might get a home grand final as well. They've played so well at the Gabba. So you have to say, even just from a travel point of view, Brisbane's in a pretty good spot this year, and you'd probably have them just ahead of the Cats. But you mentioned some of the players. I just quickly ripped through the top five players for each team. So for the Cats, I've got Dangerfield, Selwood, Hawkins, Blitzars, Mitch Duncan. So Duncan and Blitzars are 29. They've got a couple of good years left in them, but Hawkins and Selwood, 32, and Dangerfield, 30. So listen, they're on the wrong end of the age spectrum when you're looking at long-term success. There's no doubt about that. Are the Cats going to be able to hang around once a guy like Dangerfield drops off? I'm not so sure about that. When you look at Brisbane, Lachie Neal, as you mentioned, he's only 27. Charlie Cameron's 26. Harris Andrews is 23. The other two guys I had, Zorko's 31 and Daniel Richards, 30. Pretty important players for them. But Hugh McGluggage, 22, and Cam Rayner, 20. So Brisbane, the age profile tells you that they should be good for an extended period of time.
And they've got the guys like the Berry brothers, here, 22 yeah. and 20, who are coming in. Hipwood's only 22. Like, in 6 years, like, in 6 years' time, he hits his peak. Like, and he's already, yeah, he's inconsistent, but in 6 years' time, like, what are we expecting from him as a key forward? Like, there's plenty there for me with and even, like, you know, Steph Martin's 33, but then they have other guys that come in, and yeah, Oscar McInerney comes in and he plays, you know, significantly well as a ruckman. And McStay's only 25. To me, yeah, looking at the future, it is pretty clearly Brisbane. And as you mentioned with Rich, who's the other guy that you mentioned that was an older player?
Yeah, Dane Zorko.
Zorko, yeah. But I think that they're a bit easier replaceable versus, you know, five out of your best seven players with Geelong.
No doubt about that. So next question, Darren Wilson, and he... I've cut the crap out. I'm getting straight to the point here. Does Tom McDonald get back in for the Demons? We spoke a little bit about them this year. We spoke about Sam Wiedemann, how well he played. Your guy, Luke Jackson, what do you think? Do they bring him back in?
I think, you know, as well as Jackson, yeah, competed and got to contest and played pretty decently well, I think that when McDonald is ready to go, they will make that switch. Yeah, I thought McDonald played well in his Jackson played well in his first game against Carlton, but they moved him straight out of that after that game. And I think they'll do the same here, that when McDonald's ready to go, they'll just make a straight switch there. It is hard to change a team that really demolished Hawthorn over the weekend, but I'm pretty sure if that is the option that is presented to them, that they'll make that switch.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers really stack up, Jackson. I know he hasn't kicked a lot of goals and he hasn't been hitting the scoreboard necessarily, but 10.5 disposals per game, which rates as above average for a key forward. Six of those are handballs, so he's in the elite category there, and he's proven that he can actually win the ball at ground level for a guy that's 198 centimetres tall. A couple of marks. He hasn't been taking those big pack marks yet, but competing is the big thing for mine. I think that they're not going to be able to fit all three in. I think this next little block of fixturing where we've spoke about where there's going to be guys in, there's going to be guys out, you're going to have to manage players. I think that between Jackson and McDonald, they're probably the second forward. So I don't think you play them at the same time, but I think one of them will play each week. I think that there's certainly an opportunity for Jackson to get some more game time throughout the year. He is only 19. The interesting thing for me, Tom McDonald, he's only 27. He feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
There's no room for him down back. So he's got, if he's going to play, he's going to play in the forward line. The interesting thing is, we know that game where they played against the Suns a couple of weeks ago, Tom McDonald went out so early that we didn't get an opportunity to see him play next to Wiedemann. So I'd like to see him with the pressure off a little bit as not the clear number one guy, how he plays next to Wiedemann. So I think McDonald comes back in, but I don't think Melbourne wants to completely shut Jackson out here. You got to keep getting him games because he's looked really, really promising for a young guy.
I think Jackson, we talk about the, I think if we're looking at the three best young key forwards, I'll say three. I was going to put Aaron Norton in there, but Norton feels like he's older, even though he's only 20 or 21. But I'm talking about the King brothers and Jackson. I think Jackson is going to end up better than at least one of those King brothers. I really, really rate him, and that's not a big statement considering where he was picked in the draft and the fact that he's 18 and already looks pretty composed out there. I think he's going to be, if not the best out of that trio of young big men, at least second would be my guess. And I'm looking at his numbers here, and it's something that's interesting to me. We always talk about, or you hear it spoken about, Ruckman takes so long to develop. I mean, the players that qualify for the Rising Star Award, Luke Jackson is third in hitouts. Now, he's not a ruckman, obviously, but he is third in hitouts, and he has had three hitouts for the season. So there are not many young ruckmen who are rising star eligible who are actually getting game time. The leader there is Hayden McLean, who's had 14 hitouts. Then there's Tristan Sherry for North Melbourne, who's had five. Then it's Luke Jackson. So there are not any super young ruckmen. We haven't talked about him, but I'll probably talk about him a bit tomorrow. Yeah, Tim English was dominant the other night, but he's 22. He's not rising star eligible. I'm talking about the really young guys. There's no ruckman really in there.
Well, they don't really play.
No, they don't.
I mean, that's why I think it's important for Luke Jackson to come into the team as a forward, as a key forward, because he's not going to get game time in the ruck at Melbourne, barring disaster. It's just not going to happen. And we see it all the time. I mean, I think a lot of teams now are going the mature age recruit avenue for ruckman, because if you invest a high draft pick, early draft stock in a ruckman, you know that you're probably in for 4 or 5 years of development. And I think with the way teams are looking at the short term and trying to win games, it's not always the way to go. So I think there's plenty of game time there, but it's going to have to be in the forward line because, he's not taking Max Gawn's spot anytime in the next couple of years anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And, I'm really impressed with how he looks as a forward anyway. But I think that'll do it today, Kane, for our mailbag episode. Thank you again for another great show.
Well, looking forward to tomorrow. Footy's back. Like I said, not too many days where we're not going to be able to actually recap a game here. So I don't know what that means for the mailbag. I think we could probably try and keep it rolling.
Yeah, I think we'll do something with it. We might not have the two full segments with it because we're going to have footy on these Wednesday nights anyway. But we'll still include the mailbag definitely throughout the week.
Well, we'll catch you tomorrow.
Kane, like you, everyone else should be subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple, that is a great way of helping out the show. Today, I'm going to leave you all with a shout out to Ken McGregor.